that we make use of the facilities of Parliament in order to listen to what you have to say and in order to enable the people present here this afternoon to put the questions to you that they would like. Perhaps I may introduce Professor Art Kuhn with a few words. He was shortly offered a day. Fantastic. Professor Akun was born in Algeria in the area called La Grande Kabylie, and he studied in Oran. He did his études supérieures at the University of Algiers and after that at the Sorbonne in Paris. He is what is known in French as agrégé de langue et littérature arabe in Arabic, although his mother's language is Berber. What's the word for Berber in English?
Berber.
Thank you. In Berber. Professor Akun started his teaching career at a secondary school, a lycée in Algeria, and then he quickly moved on to the Sorbonne, became maître de conférence, which is, I suppose, what we call a lector at the University of Lyon, and at the moment he is professeur d'histoire, professor of the history of Islamic thought at the Sorbonne. And he's also directeur scientifique of a periodical Arabica. And he's also a member of the comité directeur of the board, you would say in English, of the Prix d'Aga Khan, of the Aga Khan Prize in Architecture. I here have a list of books which he published in French, English, and Arabic. I will not mention the whole list because it is long. Even longer is the list of articles which Professor Art Kuhn published in French and in English. I see here 46 articles in French and 5 in English. And suffice it to say that Professor Art Kuhn is in the world, in the Islamic world, but also in the non-Islamic world, which is interested in the Islam, a well-known expert, and that he teaches all over the world, from Princeton to Samarkand, also in Paris, and of course in Amsterdam, where he has filled the chair of professor of Islamic studies at the University of Amsterdam, and I believe that his visit today has something to do with that. So without any further ado, I should like to ask Professor Art Kuhn whether he would be willing to tell us something on the subject of this meeting. And the subject of this meeting is the problems that have arisen, in particular in Amsterdam, and in particular with young people of Moroccan origin. These disturbances have taken place some weeks ago and have been much commented in the Dutch press. Why is it that in particular a certain age group, say between 12 and 20, and in particular of among the Moroccan community, are so susceptible to getting carried away and create these disturbances? Is that because there is much unemployment among them, social deprivation? Is it because of discrimination by Dutch society? For example, nightclubs that do not let them enter. Is it because there's something wrong with the way their parents educate them? What is your view on this? And before I ask Professor Art Kuhn to tell us his thoughts about this, I'd like to draw your attention to a book that he and I put together and which was published some years ago with the help of Gijs van der Voer of the Amsterdam Center of Foreigners, Amsterdam Center for Buitenlanders, sitting at this table. So, Professor Art Kuhn, may I ask you to say something on this?
Okay. Thank you very much. And let me say first that I'm happy to be back in this country where I worked for 3 or 4 years, I don't remember. I taught at the University of Amsterdam and I had a lot of contacts with people here, colleagues as well as journalists. And although I do not come as often as I did to this country, I keep in touch with what is happening here, because what I learned when I was coming here is that Holland has its own approach to all problems of Islam and of migrants in general. And I have always been interested in comparing the answers given in Holland, in England, in Germany, in France, as well as in other countries like Italy and Europe and Spain, which I visit very often. This means that I try to have a look on Islam and the problem of Muslims who are living in Europe in general. And I try to understand what would be the future of Islam in each of these European countries, but I am more interested in knowing what would be the situation and the evolution of Islam as a religion and of Muslims coming from several countries as citizens of European countries, which means also as citizens of the European Union. This means that we have to consider, I think, altogether that European Union is already a new political space and a new space of citizenship beyond the national spaces represented so far by the state nations, which we know. This approach, I think, is helpful to go beyond the solutions, the different solutions given in each country to the problem of the new presence of Islam and Muslims in these countries, because the approach of this country or of each country to Islam and Muslims is very often conditioned by the previous history of these countries with Muslim countries where Holland, France, Britain has been ruling the countries itself just before the Second World War. There are influences of this history in the way problems are approached. For example, in France, it's very clear about this. Maybe here it's a little bit less. But I think we have also to have this attention kept on the historical influences, on the ways the present issues are addressed, so that we can fix more properly our analysis of the future of Islam and Muslims living in the new political space, which is the European space. If we think like this, then we have to reconsider the relationship between each country with the states of nations from which migrants are coming to European countries. This is for me essential, because the problems which we are facing in each country, in each European country, do not depend only on solutions in each country. It depends also on the evolution of the kind of relationship which existed and which has to be changed in the future between European states and the partners like Morocco, Algeria, Turkey, all state nations from which Muslims are coming here. Because as you know, the migrants, even when they get citizenship, are still linked. They have some allegiance still to their country where they come from. And this also has to be considered very seriously to move on for in the search of new answers to the problems raised here. Another aspect on which we have to insist is the policy, the cultural policy, and the educational policy of each European country about the new cultures which are represented in each European country. I mean by this that we have to consider the necessity to change the programs of teaching at secondary schools, if not at primary schools, to introduce not some elements only of Turkish history, of North African history, of Indonesian history and society, but to introduce, to give more place, more importance, and organic importance in the programs to study the religious phenomenon. I say to study the religious phenomenon, not particular religions taught for its own, each religion taught for its own. Because the necessity is to improve the intellectual knowledge of the human dimensions, historical dimensions, anthropological dimensions of what I call the religious phenomenon, not only in other societies outside Europe, but inside Europe itself. Because there is a discrepancy which has been created by the evolution of the political philosophy underlying the concept of democracy as it is practiced in European countries. And the separation which we had and we have in European countries between the church and the state, as we used to say, this separation has been translated in the system of education by the lack of attention given to, not, I repeat, particular religions, to bring back a teaching of religions at school. This is not what I am meaning here. I mean the teaching of the religious phenomenon, what all religions have in common. For example, in all religions we have a relation to the sacred. If we ask to a citizen, what is the sacred for you today? What the sacred represents for you today? In France, in Holland, in everywhere. The answer would be either ignorance or indifference. I don't mind, I don't know what it is, we don't use it, I have no relation to it. Which means that something extremely important, which exists not only in religions, but it exists also, the dimension of sacred exists also even in secularized culture. This is one example. Many other examples can be given about the impossibility in the secularized culture as it has been given and generated through centuries, since at least 19th century in Europe, made us today in a kind of inability of understanding a religious sensitivity, a religious life, a religious expression of people. And this has generated many misunderstandings, because the only answer which we witness in all European countries to the problems raised especially by Muslims and Islam who are living in these countries is just to say, we are Democrats, we are liberal, our constitutions allows you to believe what you want to believe. If you want to have mosques, okay, you will have mosques. You want to have a school, we pay for your school, and you will teach in your school what you want to teach in your school, because we are Democrats. My position about these very burning issues in all European countries is that we have an intellectual responsibility to the way religions are manipulated in our time, especially since last 30 years, 40 years, not only in Muslim countries, but also in Europe itself. And by intellectual responsibility, I mean the necessity for the state to provide the citizens with the essential tools to interpret correctly religious manifestations in the public space, and to reflect about the use made of religion, for example, when we give the freedom to religions to give the teaching they want according to their definition of religion, according to their conception of religion, without referring at all to the elementary tools which are provided, for example, by sociology of religion, by religious anthropology, which are social sciences dealing with the phenomenon of religion, bringing some explanations which are basic, essential today to deal with the issues of relationship between religious vision of the world, religious expression, religious conceptions about politics, etc., on one side, and on the other side, all what we are used to in European culture and system of education as the secularized view about all these issues. We know that the essential issue about which many Algerians are killing each other in their own countries is the same issue for which French people during the revolution killed each other, because we had French people who were Catholic and were defending the Catholic view about human rights, for example. The Church opposed its veto in 1769 to the Declaration of Human Rights made in French during the French Revolution. And I can tell you even more than that. When President Mitterrand decided to put les cendres de l'abbé Grégoire in the Pantheon, French Pantheon, you know what French Pantheon is, represents. Here is an example of the sacred in a French laic republic. This place of Pantheon is a place to sacralize great men who contributed to illustrate French Republic. Only heroes and great contributors to build and defend the concept of republic and republic space since the revolution can enter in this sacred place, which is a sacralizing place. Once one is entered there, he becomes a kind of sacred person. Here is an example which I mentioned about the the diffusion of the sacred, which doesn't belong only, is not handled only by religions. Our culture, which is not based on an anthropological definition of sacred, taught us that the sacred is particular to religion. When Gainsbourg, the singer, French singer, proposed to give another frame to sing the Marseillaise, French people have been revolted. He touched to something sacred. And we are in the Republic, French Republic. So this kind of education we didn't give. And we are not yet giving. So this problem of the young people now who are creating violence. Of course, there are all the reasons which are currently mentioned. Unemployment, social isolation of people, uprooted people from their culture, many reasons. But first of all, I think, we have to think about the crisis of ethical education in European countries itself. The great defect in all the policy with the migrants in European countries is that we look only to their defects, to explain their behavior from their backwarded culture or from Islam, which is not updated as a religion. Islam, which cannot separate the state from religion, etc. All these kind of explanations. I would not deny that these things are playing a role. But this is not sufficient to bring solutions to this phenomenon, which is very complex. Which kind of ethical and civic education is given at schools in European countries? We see the same thing in France. We had a lot of violence in France, in the secondary school, dans les lycées. And it is not only the migrants who are violent and killing. It is also les Gaulois, as we say in France. You have les Gaulois and the others. Gaulois are the French, true French people. So there is a problem which is a crisis inside the culture itself. So this crisis inside the culture itself has to be taken into consideration, because people living here and coming from outside will not give any answer to their own problems in the type of education which is proposed to them in the secondary schools and in the elementary schools. And we have to add to this crisis, which is particular to the countries here, the enormous crisis inside Islam as a religion itself. Inside Islam itself, there is an enormous, a terrible crisis. Can you imagine that this religion, which is playing such a role on political level all over the world, is not producing one theologian who would raise problems of theology from inside to address all the problems of crisis, ethical crisis, spiritual crisis inside Islam as a religion? Ignorance has developed all over the Islamic world. Ignorance of Islam itself, or ignorance of Islam by Muslims. How can you understand? How can you expect from those Muslims living here who didn't have the chance to go even to primary school? Where would they take some information about ethical values, for example, as it is taught by Islam. They are submitted to the newspapers, they are submitted to the official discourse like all others. And when they are here, they have to face a double crisis. Their own crisis inside, of which they cannot even speak. They do not have spaces where to speak about their own crisis, where to have exchange with some people who would bring some basic information about what Islamic thought would say about the present problems. They don't have this opportunity. They have only imams who are not necessarily educated in the knowledge of what Islamic thought would say today in Holland about the way Islam should be understood and performed. They don't have this possibility. If they go back to their countries, they would go back to the enormous problems, enormous crises on all levels, which these countries are going through. And you, how to be astonished that youngsters, teenagers, who cannot find any help, any support, any place where to identify themselves to belonging to some tradition which would be presented with some critical approach, not only with the slogans which we are using on both sides when we speak to each other. These teenagers are lost. And this I can tell you, because when I give lectures and they come to listen, I know how they would stay with me years to listen to me. Yes, because they don't help. Their parents cannot help, because they are themselves lost. They don't know. Imams, okay, imams are good for performing prayer. You need an imam to perform a prayer, but they cannot teach them how should be the exegesis of the Quran today. Nobody would take away, is able to tell, because they are not trained for this. They do not have schools to be trained for this. They do not have schools here. They do not have schools in their own countries. So you see the responsibility of Democrats who say, we are Democrats, we give you mosques and you do what you want. We give you schools and we pay for the schools and you teach what you want in these schools. Belgium has officially recognized Islam as an official religion, as you know, since 1974, which means in Belgium that Islam has to be taught like Catholic, like Protestant, etc. Ethical, Islamic ethics have to be taught to teenagers at school by professors coming from Islamic religion. But we are absolutely ignorant about what ethical thinking, as it developed inside Islam since medieval ages. This is absolutely unknown. I have worked on a famous book which is written by a philosopher in 10th century whose name is Miskewe. He wrote a book in the line of Aristotelian Ethica Nicomache, which means that in 10th century we had philosophers in Islam who were able to read Aristotle, to read Plato, and to discuss Aristotle and Plato, to give all the place for this discussion. What happened to this book, which is translated in English and in French? What happened to this book? Dead. Like all major books are dead. I mean, they are not taught anymore in any school. This I call a crisis. an intellectual crisis, a cultural crisis, which is not recognized. And we have to remedy it for this in European societies, because European societies have economic resources, they have libraries, they have many professors, they have all possibilities to provide a modern culture about history of religious thought on the same level, all religious thought considered on the same level, and giving the possibility for these young people to recognize themselves in this kind of teaching, and to make them able to discriminate a religion which is manipulated for political purposes by ignorant militant people, and what a religion can offer on the level of ethical life, for example, when it is presented properly, respecting all those thinkers, and we have thinkers which who deserve to be respected, to give them a sense of an intellectual approach, an intellectual respect to what religion has represented in the past in all cultures, and why not, what religion still can represent in our time, to give to people a sense of continuity in their search for values to illuminate their behavior, their choices today in the modern societies. This is not provided in democratic societies. I am not saying that it is provided in Muslim societies. I repeat that it is not. It is not. The way Islam is taught in Muslim countries itself, I qualify it as a dangerous teaching. Yes? When they teach, for example, things about Christians and Jews, which are absolutely wrong, wrong when we report it to the Quran itself, which shows the level of ignorance which is brought to the school. That's why I speak on institutionalized ignorance at the school. Ignorance, it is taught at the schools, at the official institutions. And this ignorance generates, especially in the mind of teenagers living here, a wrong reference for their identity, like they say. They want identity. And when they look for something to nourish this identity, to support this identity, they get ignorance. Ignorance, definitions based on ignorance about Islam. It works like this. It works like this. It works like this. And who cares? I think I have to stop.
Well, I suppose, Professor Akun, we care, otherwise we wouldn't be here.
Yes, of course. But who cares?
Well, thank you very much indeed for your introductory statement to this discussion. You certainly, Professor Akun, have touched upon some important subjects. You appear to ascribe a prime role to education, to Dutch schools and what they should teach, and that certainly is a very important point. But I think some people in the audience would like to put some questions to you. It is now 4:20 or thereabouts. We have a good time for discussion, and I should like to open the floor to that. Mr. van der Voer, would you like to start? And then perhaps we can see whether there are any more questions, and then go along and ask Professor Akun to answer them.
Thank you, Mr. Borgerstein. Most of the subjects raised are already mentioned in our books. I would mention page 77 of this book about the new generation coming up with this the generation with its features and its dangers, I have two specific questions to Professor Akun on the subject of the youth and Islam. First is, when I look at what has happened in Brixton in England, what is in Bradford in England, in Vaux-en-Velin in France, in Amsterdam now two times, there is the factor of the police as a detonator. That is, it's an action of civil society to the youth. Has it to do something with identity of the youth, or is it something else? Is discrimination a point of view? And that comes to my second question, that unlikely of different to the common point of view, that those who are the militants in the youth movement are not the undeprived, not the deprived, but are well-educated youngsters with a job, coming from a good family, who are the gangmakers of it. How does it fit, in your opinion, about identity, youth, Islam? It's a complex question, I know, but you are a professor, I'm not.
Mr. van der Voer says something which might be of importance, which I didn't know, that among the young people involved in these disturbances, many of them have jobs. Now, what I do have is an article written here in a Dutch daily called Trouw. Marianne Junger, she's a sociologist, and she works with delinquents, and she says here that the chômage, that unemployment, that there does not appear to be a link between unemployment of the parents or of the father and delinquency of the son. Now, if that is true, that is an important statement, because usually one of the main explanatory factors of these disturbances are social deprivation. That's what you refer to, social deprivation, unemployment, and so on. Marianne Unger doesn't apparently think so. You apparently don't think so. So if that is accepted, then that removes one possible factor that might explain delinquency, but is that in fact correct? Is Marianne Junger correct in saying that? Are you correct in saying that? So what is the link? It seems to be, what's the link between unemployment, social deprivation, and delinquency?
Yes, I answer now.
Please.
Yes.
The situation of youngsters should not be considered in a categorization based on the origins of the youngsters. When we see, for example, in Germany, youngsters who are well-educated, as you say, who are prosperous, they have a prosperous situation, and they are engaging in Nazi or neo-Nazi movement. These are German people, German youngsters. In France, we have the same with the extreme right. Maybe here you might have some in that direction too. So I think we have to free our mind from the way we look to a category. Because these people are foreigners, they come from outside, we fix on them a special attention and we try to find out why they behave like this. They behave like this partly because they belong to a society which is producing this kind of behavior, not only for this category, but for a category of youngsters, not all youngsters, fortunately, who also develop violence in the society. So this is my first answer. The second answer is that for this category, when we come to reflect about the way they live, the way they behave in the society, there is a mal de vivre. I don't know how to say it in English.
Weltschmerz. Yes. Okay. Weltschmerz. Yes. Mal du monde.
Un mal de vivre. Yes. Mal de vivre is a complex expression. It refers to many things in the same time. And this mal de vivre is not taken into consideration in the society where they live. To give you an explanation of this, just this week, a trial has been opened in Paris for a woman, a Mali woman, who practices in France since many years this custom, which is considered in Mali culture and history and religion, as they understand the religion, as something good, as something necessary, which is the excision of young girls. Excision of young girls.
Look to meisjes besnijden, is dat dus, hè?
Look to this. How many contradictions are in this? To bring a woman of 55 who practiced all her life this ritual practice, highly considered, as she explained to the judge, highly considered in her society and in her culture. She came to Paris, she continued to do that. Nobody cared of giving to these Malian people somewhere some education to prevent this kind of behavior by education, by explaining that belief in a society, here is another example, to teach what belief is in an anthropological approach of belief, not in a theological approach of belief, to tell to people you have to believe this because it's good in Islam and God has told us and this and that and this, and Jews are telling the same and the Christians. This is another thing which is dangerous for our multicultural society. I tell again that there is, above all these issues through which we are going, there is an intellectual problem which is not solved in the history of European thinking, European thought. Let's consider the history of European thought. I'm not speaking on the history of Islamic thought, because all traditions of thinking today, all Chinese, Indian, African, Islamic, Confucian, Buddhist, whatever you want, all these traditions of thinking are under the hegemonic domination of intellectual thinking coming from Europe through modernity. I mean by this that all traditions of thinking are in a crisis when they had to face, and they have to face, the way of thinking produced in Europe and which is prevailing in Europe through all over the world. Like economic thinking is prevailing, like monetary system is prevailing, intellectual way of thinking of solving the problems in society or generating the problems of society is also prevailing in all these traditions of thinking. We do not pay attention to this because we assume implicitly, it is out of discussion, that the way of thinking which is used and imposed and spread all over the world from Europe since 18th century until now, under the name of the philosophy of enlightenment, this philosophy is the one that we have to follow. if we want to be modern, if we want to solve all our problems. Look to all what we are saying about democracy, human rights, etc. So these young people, again, precisely because they have resources in their families, which kind of books they are reading, which kind of education they received at school, which kind of education they are not receiving in their families, although very rich. It's true. So what's in the mind of these people? These people are depending, like all others, on the currently spread discourse through the media of today.
May I just say, would you give us your name and your organization, if any?
My name is Kerima Bihesh. I work for the UN Arab Dialogue. And you made a very global statement. It's a question of cultural. I don't think it's only a question of cultural internalization of values or education. I also think it's interaction with the kind of society we live in. And although you are white, high educated, although you have certain values, when you are confronted with several child exclusion, I'm sure it can make you angry and make you, resist against society.
Is the question clear?
Yes. So I think this is what I'm missing.
Okay, the question is, I think the question is clear.
The thing I want to add is, I don't think we have to jump too far to the conclusion that unemployment is not a real reason for consequences of crime reductions, because we're not talking about unemployment, but level of income.
But?
Level of income. It's something different from unemployment, although their fathers are unemployed, or they have this very old feeling, but it's not high. And they have a very huge number of children.
Right, so there are two questions, really.
I don't believe, you know, this.
I think the question is clear. In fact, there are two questions. The first question is, how does discrimination by, let us say, society come into all this? And secondly, even though unemployment might in itself not by itself not be a cause, there is still a level of income differential which is considerable between the people that get out on the streets to create havoc and their surrounding society.
Yes. Of course there is an ethnic discrimination. But also, this argument has to be manipulated with some caution. Because we use it too much in a discourse of victimization. And we have to make the youngsters, as well as the adults, who are using the same arguments, we have to make them conscious about the necessity for all of them to start from a self-criticism of their culture.
Would you please let Professor Akul speak?
Yes.
And then there are other people in the audience who also want to say something. Professor Akul.
Yes. So there is a self-criticism of all people living in European countries to not give too much or the exclusive importance to this argument of the ethnic discrimination, which I repeat exists. But to fight against, we have also to consider the kind of culture, the kind of discourse which we are producing in European societies to this society to fight for having our emancipation, our place, etc. And if we are not able to develop a self-criticism about what Islam, for example, represents in the history of Islam, in Islamic societies itself, before it came here, this, I do not know many people who are doing this exercise. That's why I am insisting on the necessity to give to Muslims living here the possibility to develop this self-criticism, because self-criticism is a complicated exercise, and we have to possess some tools to go through a self-criticism. And we see Europeans themselves not using self-criticism, for example, about the role, the historical role, and the present ideological role played, given to reason of enlightenment. This is absolutely crucial, to ask for self-criticism from Europeans themselves, to not look at all these foreigners coming to disturb their societies, their values, their civilization, etc., looking at them through the postulates, because there are postulates, of reason of enlightenment. Reason of enlightenment has to be criticized. And Europeans have to get free from the intellectual categorization of history, of cultures, of religions, of all things belonging to human beings, by criticizing the intellectual frame through which they are judging, they are perceiving, they are categorizing. So I am asking on both sides a self-criticism. I should not listen with respect to the discourse of victimization. If this discourse is not accompanied, is not based first on a self-criticism. Again, when I say this, you see what it requires from a policy, a democratic policy in European societies, to face the needs, the legitimate needs of this population of foreigners coming here. Europeans are asked to open spaces, not of freedom, because they exist. Political freedom exists. But spaces for cultural communication, this doesn't exist yet.
Thank you very much for this answer. I don't know whether the lady would like to come back, but first of all, I'd like to ask other people in the audience who would like to make any comments or put a question. Anybody? Yes, sir. Would you please say who you are and which organization you represent?
My name is Pim van Harten. I'm currently graduating on the subject of political Islam or Islamism. Also, I'm employed by the organization called Euro-Arab Dialogue. On the issue of political Islam, we didn't really touch upon it, but you seem to imply that in this crisis of identity or experienced crisis of the Arab migrants, there might be the danger of political radicalization, manipulation by some elements which might be Islamist or fundamentalist, as some would say. There is obviously a connection with how this is seen working in the Arab world itself. Do you actually really think that Islam or radical Islam or Islamism is able to mobilize these inner city Arab migrants, youngsters? Do you think that delinquency is one step before radical Islam? And if not so, I don't think you would agree. So if not so, what would that conclusion mean for the analysis of political Islam in the Arab world? Would it not imply that also there we are not facing a mobilization on the basis of political Islam or fundamentalism?
Yes, we have to make a distinction between the role of political Islam in the Arab countries or Muslim countries in general, where we have a situation of struggle, of political struggle for power and for the kind of regime which people would like to have. This is a normal struggle in politics. It's going on in Muslim countries, and it is beyond, much beyond the problem we are considering here. This being said, I do not think that what we call Islamic fundamentalism has a great responsibility in generating violence with youngsters in European countries. Because these people are teaching on their way, with their own style, some ethical values, which goes on the other direction. I mean, on the direction of refusing violence, especially delinquency. Although, from a point of view of theology, for example, I would not agree with the way they teach Islam. But from that narrow point of view of the ethical teaching, they have a discourse which is rather positive, not negative, here in Europe. Except when you have something which is directly linked to political movements in the countries. This is another matter. So this distinction is essential to not make a wrong judgment about what's going on about the teaching given in the name of Islam and what's going on in the Muslim countries itself, to not create a confusion about this. Now, this being said, I think it's not sufficient to prevent all this violence which we are witnessing in European societies, and I think that we have to raise the issue as widely as I try to do it. I mean, to see what's going on inside the societies itself, I mean European societies, all what I told about the crisis, and to see also what's going on in the communities, the way the communities are dealing with this issue itself.
May I ask you, Professor Arkoun, following on to the last question, you live in Paris, you're very familiar with French society, you're a Frenchman yourself. Do you see fundamentalist Islam making inroads among the Maghreb communities in France, or do you think it is something which is limited to North Africa and perhaps other countries, but not really noticeable within France?
Yes, in France and maybe in other European countries, but especially in France, I do not see any kind of progress of what we call fundamentalist Islam in Muslim milieu in France, because France, as you know, has a very strong laic culture, and this very strong laic culture is used at school. So young Muslims going through the French school are learning something. Not all what they should learn about religion, as I say, but they are learning something about the way to approach religion, especially in France.
I would like to put a question to Professor Arkoun. Would the lady like to come back to what was previously said?
What
Professor Arkoun said.
Marginalization and as a consequence of exclusion. And he told me we should not victimize.
Professor Arkoun, I'm sorry, I have to come in here. Professor Arkoun said that he was not willing to discuss the matter of victimization without at the same time discussing the matter of.
Statements.
Without the matter, without the element of self criticism. That's what he said.
I'm still unfinished. It's very easy to say that. What I mean is that I want to ask you the question, and this is why I couldn't finish. I was just making statements. And do you really think that in these days Islam is such an important factor as a consequence of these problems or any solution? Is it because sometimes I don't feel so, to be honest with you, as a Dutch citizen, that the Islam still is as much powerful in this modern society to
yes.
be a moral teacher or to be an equal
Yes. Yes, you have noticed that I have spoken on culture and education in general, not on Islam specifically. But we cannot neglect Islam as a current discourse which is used currently in the milieu des migrants, in the milieu,
circles.
It is used as a reference, but it is used as a reference which is not deeply important, I agree, but still it comes as a reference among these people, especially when they want to speak about identity and all this. And it comes with such a lack of information about Islam which is used in this discussion that it creates more damage than it brings some emancipation, some new directions. So Islam is not important, I agree, but still it's there. And we have to consider the way it is used so that people recognize the true reasons why they are having such difficulties in living in European societies. And the difficulties are many, but I think, again, that we didn't pay attention to the difficulties coming from information about European culture, society, history, etc., and Islamic history, Islamic culture, Muslim societies also. We have to keep both in mind and to develop information on both so that people can make their choice, make their decisions on the basis of more positive information. This, in my view, doesn't exist yet on both sides. That's why when we have discussions about all these issues, especially about violence, we exchange des lieux communs, slogans. We do not exchange any information.
Mr. Van der Voer.
You talking about, Professor Akun, about education, about role of religious education in a laic environment in schools. So, if you're talking about religion, we're also talking about imams. Should imams be taught in a situation of polarization, as we know in this country, that they should be taught by their own denominations, or should they be taught Dutch imams, European imams, at Dutch universities?
Yes.
Clear question,
yes.
Difficult problem.
Yes. I try to give a clear answer too. First of all, I never say, and I didn't say, you heard me, religious education. I never use this expression. Again, I am struggling against the use of this expression. I want to eradicate this expression, because it is a dangerous one. Because it keeps us in traditional categories of thinking. Because it keeps us in the theological, old theological frames of thinking. And I have always repeated that the theological frames of thinking built by Jewish thought, by Christian thought, whether Catholic, Orthodox, Protestant, Buddhist, etc., you take any religion, the theological frames of thinking developed by all these religious communities, I call them intellectual and cultural systems of mutual exclusion. Maybe you don't understand. I see some faces who are asking what does he mean by this. I mean very simply that when you study Jewish theology, you would learn that Jewish people is the elected people. who received the revelation of the true God. And you have to go through the truth as it is given and kept and recognized and handed down to generations by Jewish Orthodox people. You come to Christianity, extra ecclesia nulla salus. That's it. To summarize.
En bestaat buiten de kerk geen hel.
Yes. And you come to Islam. Prophet Muhammad is the last one. He brought the last word about revelation and salvation. You cannot have salvation if you do not go through this last manifestation of the word of God addressed to people. This is mutual exclusion. Each one excludes the other through teaching, religious teaching. Never. It is a great moment of human mind when Europeans discovered the necessity to get rid from this dogmatic definition of the truth.
That happened in the Enlightenment.
And then Enlightenment took over after theological reason, and it developed the same sovereignty, because reason of Enlightenment taught me, I shall do it with science. I shall do it with objectivity. I shall suspect all dogmatic formation, etc., etc. And we went through the political struggle between the state and the church that we knew very well in Europe and that we solved in Europe with the solutions in which we are living today.
But where should we educate our imams?
Yes, I am coming to your imams. I am coming to your imams, but I have to refute the expression, and that journalists here do not write, that I am calling for religious education at schools in Europe. I am fighting in Muslim societies against religious education. I'm defending the teaching of social sciences applied to the study of religion, which is totally different. A totally different posture of reason. Not only towards religions, but also towards the secularized ideologies developed in Europe in the name of reason, of enlightenment, science, etc. I am raising an intellectual issue of the history of thought in general, which is thoroughly different from all what we are used to do and to teach in our schools. And even in our universities. I challenge my colleagues about this. So, this being said, my dear translator, the problem of imams has to be put in the light of what I said now. Not only the problem of imams, the problem of rabbis, the problem of priests, the problem of any kind of teaching related to religion. Mm-hmm. This is a new problem to be addressed. Not only for Muslims. Of course, Muslims have this visibility. They came and they are disturbing everything to which we have been accustomed so far. And they raise new problems, new challenges. And to handle these challenges, we have to say to the imams that they have to go through to be an imam, to be a priest, to be a rabbi, to go through the history of compared religion, which is a basic formation, to come back to Islam and to know what Islam has to tell to our societies today as a tradition of spirituality. They have to go this training. If they refuse to go this training, okay, we shall have trouble. We have to be prepared for troubles. And all these pending issues will continue. So the problem comes back to politicians. which kind of decision to make about the presence of religion in this public space, because you cannot eradicate religion from the public space. It's there. And we are Democrats. So, this is a challenge. How to bring these people to accept a system of education, a system of training, which is accepted by Protestant people, which is accepted by Catholics, who have faculties of theology, who have faculties of... I am not saying that in the faculties of theology they are all doing what I'm asking you. I know all these faculties. I taught in these faculties, not only here, but in all over Europe and America. So I speak out of my experience of what is taught in the faculties of theology. By Jews, Christians, Jews, I'm putting the problem as a whole. That we stop looking to Islam as an exception, as something which is there and which is just disturbing. This is wrong. So if we want to put the problem of imams, we have to have the political courage, and we are speaking in the place where political decisions are made.
Some.
You say with your wise experience. But still, we are in the parliament, some decisions are made in the parliament, and if you give me time, I can give some comments about the projects on which we spoke together. You remember how we fought together to create in Holland, like we are now creating in France, an institute, a national institute for Islamic studies. I fought in France since 15 years with all the majorities coming in the French government to persuade them to create a national institute, I mean on the level of national institute of Islamic studies, where Islam would be taught in that manner to generate an interest for imams and others to be trained according to the requirements of our modern society and our modern thinking. We succeeded just some months ago. Jean-Pierre Chevènement had enough courage to go on, and he did it. And we are going to do it. But you did it here, finally. And I have the program here. If I had time to comment the program which is fulfilled in this new so-called institute in the manner we designed it intellectually, you will see that it is... I should not speak too.
That's a good thing, to speak with passion.
Yes, it is a bit, because this is life.
Yes. Well,
this is life, and these are the real problems on which we have to fight. Okay. Not the derivative problems on which have no relation to the real issue. This has a real issue, a relation to real issue. We didn't design at all an institute for doing what is mentioned here. I don't have time to comment on it.
Well, as a matter of interest, there is now an institute for the study of Islam. I think the title is like that. That may be something different. At the University of Leiden. Now that is at the level of academic level, at the university level. Other than that, I myself am not aware of any particular center for the study of Islam in Holland. But that has been set afoot. In fact, it was opened a few months ago. We have, I think, time for one more question. Don't know. Yes, sir. Yes, please. Would you give us your name, please?
My name is Robert van der Bolt. I'm an assistant to the Liberal Party here. Professor Arkun, you told us today that the Islamic world must be prepared to be self-critical. That Christian culture must be prepared to be also self-critical. Does it mean that we must go home today, close our doors, close our curtains, and be so? Or is there a possibility to visit it, one another?
To
visit one another.
Of course there is a possibility. I don't understand. What did you understand about what I said? I don't have the feeling that I said the contrary.
No, but...
What did you understand?
How must I say this?
Je mag het in het Nederlands doen, dan vertaal ik het in het Frans.
S'il y a une possibilité d'avoir du respect l'un à l'autre et.
Met respect bewaren of je dan toch nog kritisch kunt zijn over elkaar.
Dus on peut être critique, on peut avoir des critiques, raison critique l'un à l'autre, et même avoir du respect de l'un à l'autre dans cette relation.
Mais bien sûr, I have used criticism in the scientific concept of criticism. I mean, like we say critique de la raison pure, for example, or critique de la raison des lumières. This is a positive criticism. It is a building criticism. It is not a criticism which says you have nothing or I don't want to communicate with you because I consider at all, not at all. I'm speaking on a criticism that we have to share because there are pending problems, for example theological problems, pending theological problems which are not yet put in the field of a critical approach. For example, the concept of revelation. All three religions living together, not only here now in Europe, but they live together for centuries since medieval ages, have the concept of revelation, are based on the concept of revelation. First, how people, European people, understand this concept? Do they pay any attention to this concept? Or did this concept disappear totally from the cultural horizon of Europeans? This is the first question. I think it has disappeared largely from the intellectual horizon of European secularized thought. This is one thing that we have to address as a problem. Second problem, how Christians, Jews, and Muslims still today are presenting to their believers in their churches, mosques or synagogues, the concept of revelation. How does it work actually, positively, inside each community, this concept of revelation? It is untouched. I mean, it is used like it has been defined in theologies since medieval ages. Since medieval ages. Because social sciences are dealing with other problems. They consider that this problem is over. It's not anymore relevant for us. So no need to give interest for this. It's not an object for research. Philosophers do not consider it. It's not their job. It's out of philosophical thinking. Theologians are repeating the orthodox definition inside each community of what religion should be understood and followed and obeyed. Because if you do not obey to the concept of revelation as it is used, for example, in the current Islamic discourse today, everything will be destroyed. I mean, political regime, political legitimacy, ethical legitimacy, everything will be totally disturbed. Here is an example. An example of search, research, and a new way to present religious phenomena, as I said, in our contemporary societies.
Thank you very much indeed, Professor Arkoun. Thank you for giving us the benefit of your thoughts. We've come to the end of this afternoon's session. We're duly grateful for your willingness to come and talk to us. And thank you all very much for coming, for having come this afternoon. I hope that you will bear the wise thoughts of Professor Arkoun in mind when you do your daily work. Thank you. The meeting is closed.